A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 195. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Frankenstein. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're continuing to look at this very interesting adaptation of Mary Shelley's classic novel, and it's an adaptation with an interesting twist. This one comes from 1968. It's a 75-minute black and white episode, one of the few surviving episodes of an anthology series called Mystery and Imagination, which ran on the ITV networks.
And one of the things that this is known for is this production of Frankenstein featured Ian Holm playing both Victor Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster, The Creation. And it's actually a much more faithful interpretation as compared to the book than most of the other adaptations that we've seen. And certainly it's much more true to the book than the modernized version that we looked at in British Invaders 137 and 138. That was the one that had a female version of Frankenstein and was a much more recent production.
Okay, so let's get back to the story from this particular episode. Last time we left the creature walking the world, rejected by his creator, trying to find his place in the world, although he's doing that by avoiding human contact because he knows his face is terribly scarred and that he repulses people. And in sort of the well-known story twist, he takes refuge in the cabin of a blind man who takes him in and is friendly to him and shelters him and offers him food and company. And this gives the creature a chance to increase his vocabulary, become more easy about speaking, and to sort of question his own existence. And as you said in the last episode, Brian, to start making some of his philosophical inquiries into himself and his relationship with his creator.
And very much like the book, things go fairly well as he's talking to this man who's blind. But when the blind man's family return and see him, things don't go so well. And Frankenstein is sent out into the wilderness once again and rejected once again. Very much the part of the thematic nature of the novel. And the creature goes back to Frankenstein and famously makes the demand for a mate. He asks Frankenstein to create a woman for him to be with.
Yes, that's right. I suppose, you know, the bride of Frankenstein, as she's been termed in popular culture. And initially, Victor Frankenstein complies with the creature's request. But as he nears completion of the female creature, he is too horrified and he realizes the consequences of what he might be about to unleash upon the world. And so he can't go through with it. He destroys the female creature before it's brought to life in this version. And of course, this leads the creature himself to make his terrible pronouncement that having been denied his own wedding, he will indeed be with Victor Frankenstein on his wedding night.
And of course, this is not going to end well for anyone, very much in the way that things were in the novel.
That's right. Things are going to get much, much worse.
Yes, absolutely. So Frankenstein is one of the most adapted stories out there. We've seen many, many versions of Frankenstein on film and television, and the vast majority of them use a few of the ideas of the original novel, but don't do much with the story and are not very faithful to that original novel by Mary Shelley. Now, the novel is now sometimes considered the first science fiction story because it was really quite early. I think its first printing was in about 1817 or 1818. And in retrospect, it has many of the things that we would now identify as being science fiction.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's, you know, we could debate whether there were other fantastical stories before this one. Certainly, I think it might lay a claim to being the first science fiction horror story. You know, whether, as I say, there are other works that predate it, perhaps you could let us know on the Facebook group. But it's one of the progenitors of the whole genre. It's one of the archetypes in a way, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think it has quite the same place in terms of establishing the science fiction genre as the works of H.G. Wells or Jules Verne, but it definitely is a very early example of something that really we could call science fiction. And I think including it and including Mary Shelley in that early group of science fiction writers, and if you like, the parents of science fiction, I'm okay with that. I think it definitely has a place there.
Okay. Now, you mentioned film and television versions. Of course, probably the most famous is the 1931 Universal Studios movie directed by James Whale, and of course, with Boris Karloff playing the creature. And as we said in our last episode, there are perhaps some nods to that in the bandaged and shrouded creature being strung up and somehow imbued with electricity from a lightning strike. And I also thought that Ian Holmes's sort of raised hairline and scarred forehead had a slight Karloff look to it. But they do other things much differently with the makeup. In fact, he's got a sort of hideously scarred patch running all down the side of one face, or rather one side of his face. So he looks, you know, quite unpleasant when he meets other humans.
Yes, the Boris Karloff version sort of established the pop culture Frankenstein that has been used in all sorts of things since then and referenced many times. And the interesting thing is that this production with Ian Holm, while it might have a few references there, is much more about that original novel.
Yes, absolutely. Getting much closer to the novel. But of course, with a work that's adapted as frequently as Frankenstein, I suppose the people behind the scenes often look to bring their own particular interpretation or twist. And as we've said, this particular production does feature one very compelling idea, which is this central double performance by Ian Holm as both creator and creation, which sort of, well, it has to accentuate the link between the two of them, Brian.
Yes, absolutely, and gives you almost this idea of Frankenstein creating a creature in his own image. I don't know if that was what they were going for, but gives you sort of a little bit in that direction there as well. But it was something that worked quite well. There was some quite clever editing that they used to put it together. And of course, they did some work with a double as well. And when the two are sort of fighting and wrestling each other, you have Ian Holm and a double. It was something that was done quite well.
Yes, it does. You know, they've done it very cleverly, the way that they make Ian Holm appear in the same shot as the two characters. You know, even for 1968, I think it's quite neatly done. You can't see the joins.
Yes, that's right. It's, as far as we can tell, the first version of Frankenstein where that was done, where you had one actor playing both roles. It is quite early, I think, for a multiple role performance in a serious production. There were certainly other comedies and humorous shows from earlier that used a single actor playing a number of roles. It was done in Kind Hearts and Coronets. It was done in a number of other sort of early films, but it was quite unusual to have it in a serious production this way.
But if you know of any other productions which have taken this similar route to adapting Frankenstein, we'd be delighted to hear about them on the Facebook page. It does remind me slightly of Danny Boyle's famous stage version, which was in 2011 at the National Theatre here in London, England, in which Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller alternated the roles, so that one night one would play the creator and the other the creation, and then they would change over for the next night. And I was lucky enough to actually go and see that, and it was a very impressive production, which again, I think, tended to emphasise the link between the two characters and the similarities between them. And it just plays up the creature's, I suppose, sense of rejection and disappointment when he meets his maker.
Yes, it's interesting to see these different takes on things, as there have been so many.
You despise me. You, who gave me life. Yes. How can hate own creation?
Must destroy you before you destroy me.
No, not so.
Must.
Why you make me in your own image, my form, but clumsy imitation yours, made more fearful by its resemblance. I have your face. I have your voice.
So we should get a little bit into our own views. We've touched on them a little bit already. Eamon, what did you like about this 1968 version of Frankenstein?
Well, if we talk about the look and sound of the production, first of all, I am a sucker for a black and white atmospheric production, and this is moody and atmospheric, looks good in black and white. I think the makeup works. I think the limited effects, which are mostly of lightning and so on, I think they work very well. I think the double scenes or the cut scenes where they've edited the two characters into the same shot look very good. So I liked the look and sound of this production, Brian. What about you?
I would tend to agree with that. They used what they had very well. The capabilities that they had were very well used, and it does have a very nice look and feel to it in that old black and white style. I really liked Ian Holm's performance or performances in this as both Frankenstein and the creature. I thought he pulled off both of them very well, and they were very strong performances to watch. It was quite engrossing in that way.
It certainly was. And, you know, they are both in their own way tormented characters. And I thought he really brought that across very well. He's very good as the creature and, you know, playing an unlikable Victor Frankenstein, but he's still very good in that role. A character who, as I've said, has got his own demons to wrestle with. So, yeah, the performance is very good. And the backup performances, you know, I think are all pretty good. Richard Vernon, as you said, Brian, he's always watchable. And he's very good as this sort of senior professor who seems to lead Frankenstein on the path to his studies, but it then becomes more and more concerned about his student. So I think the other, you know, the other performance is also very good as well.
Yeah, the performances were definitely well done in this. Ian Holm's performance, you know, both characters are very uncomfortable with themselves and are struggling with either existence or the things that they've done with what they could and should do in the future. And he did that very well in both cases.
Okay. What about the adaptation in terms of the scripting and the writing of this episode, Brian?
You know, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is a difficult novel to adapt, especially to adapt faithfully, because it is convoluted in places. It has all these different locations. It tends to be told in a character telling the story and then reading an account that's another character telling the story, which then reads in another account of a character telling a story. So it's fairly convoluted just to read, and turning that into something that is more suitable dramatically is something that I could see would be very challenging. And in this case, especially with this 75-minute TV drama, they needed to simplify things. And I think they did that quite well. I think they did a nice job of simplifying things and including the most important things and including a lot of important things, and getting a nice sort of very much true to the book or true to major parts of the book type of adaptation.
Yes, I think it is, you know, as you say, within the limitations of the source material, it's a pretty faithful adaptation of the concepts of Mary Shelley's novel. And I think everything they've done with it has been was pretty clever. So yes, I liked the adaptation. I like the fact that we have this more cerebral creature and that we get these philosophical head-to-heads between him and Victor Frankenstein. Obviously, they become increasingly aggressive and unpleasant as the story goes on. But it is interesting to have those discussions. So yeah, it's great stuff in terms of the scripting.
There are a lot of adaptations of Frankenstein that move away from the more intelligent creature. And while those can be fun films in their own right, you lose something. You lose something of what the novel is about and some of the ideas there and the interactions between creator and creation, which is very much central to what Mary Shelley's novel was about.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Anything else you want to pick out as good points from the production?
Well, I will say that I think this is probably now my choice film or TV version of Frankenstein that I would watch to look at that story. This is now my favorite one that does a really nice job of working with that material.
Oh, okay. High praise. I'm just going to mention a couple of things that really stood out for me. One was a camera shot where a face dissolves into a skull, which I thought was very chilling and effective. And there was also, I liked the soundtrack where they'd added this thumping heartbeat, particularly in the sequences around the actual making of the creature. And that was very well done and very disturbing for Victor Frankenstein. And I think for us, the viewers as well. So yeah, that was a couple of things that I wanted to note. What about the bad points of this show? Was there anything that stuck out for the wrong reasons, Brian?
Well, there isn't a lot, to be honest. It is a production of its time, so the quality you get is film stock from TV use from the late 60s, and it does have the feel of an older production. And if that isn't for you, you might struggle with it.
Yes, I mean, you know, we've mentioned that they've had to limit their locations and center all the action in Heidelberg in a small number of sets and a small amount of outside broadcast recording. So it does struggle a little bit in the limited locations, and some of the sets are a bit samey, which I suppose, as you say, Brian, that was a television problem of the time. But apart from that, you know, there's not really much else to criticize it for. It is of its time, but pretty good for that time, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And if you are expecting something more like the Universal Frankenstein or the more monstrous type adaptations of Frankenstein, this is different from that. This is something else. This is something that is much more like the original novel if you've read that.
Okay. I suppose, you know, we might mention that Big Finish, a company that we're quite fond of here on British Invaders, they have their own version of Frankenstein coming out very shortly as we're recording now, Brian, and I guess they're sticking fairly closely to the source material as well.
Yes, they are, and I'm looking forward to hearing that, and it will probably, because of the length of it and because it's audio, it will probably be able to get a little bit more of the story into it. But yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to hearing that version with Arthur Darvill and Nick Briggs.
Okay, smashing. So I guess that's going to bring us to making our recommendations to our listeners as to whether they should purchase this four-disc DVD box set from Network DVD of The Mystery and Imagination, and in particular, whether they should look at this one episode we've been talking about, Brian.
Well, the short answer from me is yes. I thought it was a very good production. It was very well done. And if you can get a hold of it, it's definitely worth watching. And from what I've seen of other things on that four-disc DVD set, and I haven't watched all of them, but from what I've seen, there are some interesting shows and some good productions on there. So I would say, yes, it's recommended for sure.
Okay, I'm going to recommend it as well, and I'm going to speak up for Network DVD, a company who I've sometimes criticized in the past for not giving us much in the way of extras. But it has to be said, they do keep putting out these bits of old television on DVD, and I guess if we don't buy them, we might not get future releases. At the moment, I've only watched Frankenstein, but I am looking forward to watching some of the other shows on this box set. The booklet that comes with it, which I've mentioned, by Andrew Pixley, is very good as well. In fact, we may be coming back to this box set in the future on British Invaders, no doubt. So yes, please buy these DVD sets from Network DVD. Please make it, you know, worth their while to keep putting them out. Because if you've any interest at all in this classic television from the 1960s on British TV, or just in a rather well done production of Frankenstein with a splendid double performance by Ian Holm, then you really should get hold of this. It is recommended. We both liked it very much, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. So, in summary, Frankenstein was originally a novel by Mary Shelley from the early 19th century, and it told the story of Victor Frankenstein, who was a student of natural philosophy and anatomy, who took what was then the modern science of the day and also looked at some of these more ancient mystical type writings and decided that he could create life and created this creature who was an intelligent and thinking creature but very much hideous in appearance. And Frankenstein is horrified with what he's done and turns the creature out into the wilderness. And the creature, of course, survives and tries to make a life of his own and interact with other people and interact with Frankenstein himself. And the two of them both struggle with their ideas of who they are and what they've done. And of course, things are quite dark and will not go well. This particular adaptation from 1968 was somewhat simplified, but really quite faithful to that novel, and featured Ian Holm unusually as both Victor Frankenstein and the creature that he created.
Okay, a rather splendid production. And if you do watch it after hearing our review, please do let us know. Come by the Facebook group and tell us what you think about it.
Yes, absolutely.
And of course, please come back and join us next time. We're staying in 1968. We've got our TARDIS dial stuck on 68 for this particular show. We're doing another ITV show, a bit of classic 60s spy-fi, a programme called The Champions, which you may remember as one of those splendid ITC shows from that era. So lots to talk about with that, Brian.
Yeah, same network and same year, but a very different kind of show, very different production, and it should be fun to look at that. So you can reach us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so you can find us at TheGeekCultureNetwork.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. And we have lots of good discussion going on a regular basis.
Yes, that's right. At the moment, we're talking about, amongst other things, the recent new Doctor Who. And there's also some giveaway contests going on, as usual.
Ah, yes.
And, of course, you can find us on VogNetwork.com, which is the home of the Voice of Geeks. That's internet streaming radio with all sorts of geek-related shows, discussing films, TV, comics and gaming. So do drop by VogNetwork.com if you get the chance.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you so much indeed for being with us. Do buy the DVD. And until next time, it's Eamon in England saying Happy Halloween.